the races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Covered the globe, actually. We went from Hong Kong to Longchamp to Pimlico. Tony Black is going to join us, and we have the same conversation pre-Preakness every year with Tony in an attempt to put away for good certain old wives' tales. Tony, good morning.
Hello, good morning, Steve. I love that expression, print the legend. That was a great expression he just informed me of. It's fact, it's legend, print the legend. Pimlico has a reputation, and I haven't been down there for quite a while. I haven't ridden a race over the racetrack, but what it used to be and what it is right now, I'm not maybe dead on. But what it used to be was a track, as you said, inside bias and speed, you were definitely at an advantage. If you come from behind horse and you try to let your come from behind horse lay closer, you usually messed his mindset up and utilized him inefficiently and ineffectively. You know, when you try to change a horse's style of running in one race, you usually don't get their best effort. Also, if you were a come-from-behind horse, as I remember it, if you let your horse run his race and you got to the turn, let's say into the 3/8 pole and into the turn, and you, because of the bank of the turn, the circumference of the turn is the same as many other racetracks of that distance. It's no different. It's the bank. The less bank that it has, the tougher it is for your horse to pick up momentum and go around that turn. And if you let your horse try to pick up momentum, let's say he's a come-from-behind horse on the turn, and you say, well, I'll let him spread the turn a little bit because it's easier for him to get around that turn because it isn't banked. Well, now you're utilizing your horse's energy, and you're losing ground. Where the horses that had momentum that they had going into the turn kept their momentum, the speed horse or the horse that was laying close. And also, you hated to be the third horse any more than the third horse out around that turn. If you were going to be four wide, you sat in behind them. But don't know exactly what it is this day and age, but that was the scenario in past years, where if you had speed, you came to the head of the lane, and hopefully you had a little bit of energy left, and you kicked him in and popped him over to his right lead, hopefully because it was easier to get your horse around the turn on his left lead, you usually could steal away. And like you said, it was a reputation of a speed bias with an inside bias. Now, to this day, I don't know. And I haven't seen many races from down there as of recent.
Well, and Tony, the part as well that, you know, that... you know, that lived on even when the TV networks, even when NBC would do an overlay, they would take the overhead graphic, the blimp shot of Churchill Downs, and then overlay it over Pimlico's oval to show that the turns were no different. You know, the ridiculousness about the tight turns. Right. We've explained this to people for literally for 15 years, and it's a topic that does not get brought up all that much. I'll refer to the crown of the racetrack a lot of times when we talk about weather and we talk about drainage on racetracks, not just on the main track either, but also on turf. Turf courses are also have a crown, but the crown provides banking on the turns, in addition to being there for drainage. It also helps on the centrifugal force aspect of horses that are turning. And you've explained this really well for years to people, because the banking at Pimlico is about half that of the typical racetrack. Give an explanation of what happens and why the banking affects the way a horse will make a run around a turn.
Well, when you have a horse that's using his lead properly and he goes into a turn and the turn is flatter, it doesn't, you know, it does make a difference if he's using his lead properly. But the turn is flatter. He's not having the advantage of the bank, the bank degree of the turn, kind of keeping him in and letting him get around that turn and throwing him in as you come to the head of the lane. When you're running around a turn that's flat, it's harder for that horse to gain momentum because the turn is flat. Now, also, when the turn is flat, a horse will have a tendency to drift out when he does try to pick his momentum up. Now you're guiding him to keep him in, so you're actually putting a little pressure on the bit to keep him from drifting out, because if you let him drift out, you're losing ground and you're using up energy to get around a turn trying to pick up momentum, and you're not going to get that maximum momentum pickup because the bank isn't helping him to get around the turn. It'd be the same as NASCAR, where you see these NASCAR races where the car goes into the turn and it doesn't have to adjust the speed tremendous amount because the bank of the turn is throwing him in and he's not, his momentum isn't carrying him out. Well, it's the same way with horses. The bank of the turn is keeping him in, and his momentum isn't throwing him out. Well, at Pimlico, guess what? His momentum will start to spread him out because the bank isn't dropping him back in there.
Yeah, and you bring up auto speedways, and that's a terrific analogy, and they call that lateral slip. Basically, the car, you know, sliding out around the turn, and that's why, you know, you go from track to track, and you know, a lot of times cars have got to break essentially and ease off through the turn because you'll slide up to the wall. Darlington, that the Darlington stripe going into the turn too fast and leaving a scrape along the back quarter panel of your car for that reason, and it's very similar here, and that was the origin of the idea that, oh, the turns must be sharp. That's why horses can't make it around. And you also, Tony, fold in too the AC Ducey portion of the way, you know, you adjust the saddle when you've got things like this. And you know, this, we don't bring it up a lot because we only talk about Charleston a handful of times a year. But when you deal with a place like that and the three-quarter ovals, the bull rings, you've got the same kind of thing. You've got to be leaning to your inside all the way around.
Right. So you ride Ace Deuce. Not so much different at Pimlico. It used to be at the bull rings where they were really 5/8 of a mile. Some of them weren't quite 5/8 of a mile, and your turns were sharp. And they were sharp, and there was some bang to them, of course. But you used to ride as a rider. Your weight makes a big difference on that horse's back. So your weight can actually throw a horse off. I can make a horse change leads by throwing my weight out and then bringing it back in. Same way you'd be riding a bicycle. You don't have to turn the handlebars to go left or right. You can use your weight to go left or right. Well, when you have your weight on that horse's back, you don't want that weight to interfere with his ability to get around a turn. So, of course, you're turning left all the time. So what do? You drop your left iron, you jack your right iron up, and it helps you lean to your weight lean towards the inside, and it helps that horse use your weight and not have your weight interfere with his left turn. So Ace Deuce was something that, especially in the bull ring, days of the bull ring, you used to even ride more Ace Deuce than you did when you rode on the mile racetracks. I remember like tracks like Timonium, which was 5/8 at one point. It wasn't even 5/8, I don't think, but it was 5/8, and it was always a fast racetrack. You know, not a lot of cushion, a track that they would bounce along the straightaways, but guess what? The straightaways weren't that long, and the turns, you were doing left turns more than you were running straight. So you used to ride real ace deuce at tracks like that. And that was the old bull ring riders, you know. Guys, like, I can remember, I'll mention names like, here's one you might want to look up, Willie Clark. I can remember when he was a jockey and riding at Charlestown Road. He was known as a bull ring rider. And he rode at a tracks that were in Maryland, West Virginia, and they were not even mile racetracks, of course. They were all 5/8 and whatever. A couple of them were under 5/8 of a mile. But those guys developed a style that helped their horses get around turns, and that's where ace deuce came into play for riders. You know, you better ride real ace deuce when you go to, let's say, Timonium.
Well, and I just looked up Willie Clark. Willie Clark last rode 90. Looks like 91.
Yeah, had some. He put me on horses at the farm when I was a kid, because he'd come to the farm and visit and bring his daughter, who got killed in a car accident. Mm. Bless her heart. But he would come and Put us up on horses on the farm that my uncle owned and I was growing up on. And Willie was in the height of his career then. I'm talking in the mid, late 50s and early 60s. And it brought back a lot of memories talking about bullring riders and Willie Clark. You know what's interesting about this Preakness? Here on past years, of course, we have a mile and a quarter race, a mile 3/16 race, and then we go to the Belmont a mile and a half. This year, we're going from a mile and a half race to a mile and a quarter.
Mile and an eighth, actually. We did the Belmont was mile and an eighth, and then we had mile and a quarter at Travers, mile and a quarter Derby. Now mile and 3/16.
It's kind of the differences of the distances. Yeah. You straightened me out on that. Yeah, it wasn't a mile and a half to Belmont. But it's funny how we changed the distances and the way they come about, you know. Wonder what effect that has in the later time of year that we're running and the distance that we're running. It's a different Triple Crown series this year than we'll ever maybe experience again because of this pandemic.
Now it's promoting. It has promoted quite a number of interesting reactions and discussions. And ideally, from a scheduling standpoint, we can return to the our regular seasonal flow, even if attendance is still not going to be, for the first part of the year, until vaccine makes it easier to open the gates back up. At least getting the schedule back to normal, I think, would go a long way. So, Tony, you got an opinion too for before we go? You got anybody that you looked at it?
I looked at it real quick, and I know there's going to be some pace in the race, more so than what we had in the last race. I'm rooting for Authentic. I would normally say an outside post is really to an advantage of a horse that can lay close or have speed. At Pimlico, it might not be such an advantage. You might want to have been in the first three or four if their speed and be the speed or lay close type horse being on the inside. Hopefully, he'll have enough run going into the first turn where he won't be more than he's probably not going to be on the lead, but you don't want to be sitting in more than sitting in behind three or four horses, maybe. Maybe sitting in behind the three going around the turn.
Well, there's no shortage of horses that want to be forward, from Art Collector to Swiss Skydiver. Thousand Words showed speed in his win at Del Mar, but doesn't necessarily, not the speed that these horses have, although he's putting on blinkers. New York Traffic is going to be in the race flow right away. Jesus' team doesn't want to be too far out of it. And, one thing before I bring Steve Haskin in, Tony, there is one aspect of this that I'll bring it up with Marty McGee in a half hour as well. The preponderance of Maryland-based Laurel Pimlico riders that are involved in this field is really notable. Because of such a big weekend in New York and in Kentucky at Keeneland and Belmont. So you've got, Sheldon Russell riding Accession. You've got Julian Toledo riding Jesus' Team. Hector Caramanos on New York Traffic. Paco's Paco. I mean, he rides the Mid-Atlantic. And Trevor McCarthy on Live Your Beast Life. Joe Bravo on Pneumatic, also Mid-Atlantic. But you've got guys who really know this, who know this racetrack. And it's an interesting, little wrinkle to have so many guys out of the room involved in the feature, of the day.
Yeah, and I can remember, it is definitely maybe a slight advantage being a regular rider there. And I can remember when Eldon Nelson came back out of retirement, was riding BBB for Del Caro, and, rode the course perfectly, the old-timer of Eldon Nelson. I can remember rooting for Jolly Joe Who and Benny Feliciano, the old man Benny Feliciano, who finished, I think, second to Little Current. And they knew how to ride the course, but I don't think that's a big deal with today's riders who ship around a lot and we see the races on TV every day. But it is nice to see the locals get the opportunity, and it brings back memories of locals that have gotten the opportunity to run good or won the race.
Well, the Eldon Nelson being very famous in that regard, and I think 54 years old when he won the Preakness for Mr. Farish and for Red Carroll on BBB. They came up mud that day, and he loved it.
Let him roll.
Exactly. Tony, I appreciate it, and we'll do some recap, and then we talk next week.
All right. Take care, Steve. Always a pleasure, and thanks. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, buddy. Tony Black, everybody, and all your banking and biases questions answered regarding Pimlico. Steve Haskin standing by, and Steve's been digging in to this field as well. And Steve, good morning.
Good morning, Steve, and how are you?
We're good.
By the way, I have a question for you. Do you know where the saying when fact becomes legend, print of legend comes from?
I don't. I have heard it plenty of times.
Yes, well, it came. It's the most famous line from a great Western movie, The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance.
Oh, absolutely. Good job. Yes. Yes.
Yes. It was one of the great lines when the newspaper editor tears up all his notes after James Stewart tells him the whole story. And he says, "You're not going to print the story?" Because he got his whole reputation because everybody thought that he shot Liberty Valance when it was John Wayne who shot him. And that's when the newspaper editor tore up his papers and says, he says, "One thing I've learned," he says, "when fact becomes legend, print the legend."
Well done, Steve. Absolutely. And for those who have seen it, it's great. Absolutely great. The tin horn comes out west, and
that's right. Tin horn
makes
lawyer,
his career.
Pacifist lawyer, and and Lee Marvin, one of the great villains in the history of motion pictures, is Liberty Valance.
Very much, very much. Good job. Well, speaking of villains, who's the villain that prevents a dual classic winner, Steve? Give us some thoughts on this group as it's come together.
Well, actually, being we're talking about sayings, I'm going to quote a saying to you. That's a saying you've probably heard yourself. It's an old bettor's saying. If you miss the wedding, don't go to the funeral. So, considering that I missed the authentic wedding big time at 8-1, I sure ain't going to the funeral at 7-5. So I'm
Fair
going
enough.
To look. I'm going to look at Art Collector to pressure him because he's going to have the rail. You got two closers inside of him. He's going to have the rail. He's fresh, and I just think that the only way you're going to beat this horse is to pressure him because he's not used to being pressured. He wants to be on an easy lead, which he was in all of his victories. And somehow he got the lead when nobody wanted in the Derby, and he just You know, he just came up on the outside, cut right in front of him, and then, you know, even though the fractions were fast, he was on an uncontested lead. I don't think he runs fast fractions, but the only time that he was pressured was in the San Anita Derby, and that was the race he got beat. So I think it's the only way you're going to beat him. I think Art Collector would be the only horse with that real kind of speed that could pressure him and keep going. So that's I'm going to look for him. But my if I'm going to make a bet on the race, I mean, the horse that I've been following from right from the beginning that I've always loved is Pneumatic. I mean, he's going to be my bet. You know, back on April 14th in my Derby Dozen, instead of doing a knocking on the door after the top 12, I ranked the top newcomers that had never been in a stakes race before, and Pneumatic had ranked as number one. I just loved everything about him. I thought he was absolutely flawless. And I wrote that, you know, if ever a horse has the look of a Derby horse, it was him. He's fourth generation, bred by the Winchell family, from their foundation mare, Carol's Christmas. He's a rare outcross. Love his pedigree. What I love about him is that in all of his races, he's been running fours and fives in Thoroughgraph and jumped to a zero in his last start in the Pegasus. I think he's a horse that's looking as finally ready to peak, because I can forgive his defeats in the stakes races. One race he was fighting for the lead, which he doesn't want. I'm not crazy about the outside post at Pimlico, but he's got an authentic. It's going to break out in front of him, so he's going to be able to move in. Max Player inside of him is going to drop back, so I think he's going to be able to get in and get a fairly good position right behind the four speed horses. And the one thing about authentic, if you're looking to beat him, is that there's a good chance there's going to be four horses inside of him going into that first turn, and you do not want to go wide into the first turn at Pimlico. So there's a possibility he could get hung wide, and if he can't get the lead, you know, we'll see what he's capable of right now. If you look at the Thoroughgraph numbers on these horses, there are no standouts at all. I mean, these horses are very equal. Yeah, Mr. Big News, you know, who made a huge jump in his, I mean, he ran a huge race. If he repeats a move like that he made on the turn, he's obviously going to be very dangerous. But, you know, he ran a half on Thoroughgraph. Art Collector ran a quarter in his last start at Ellis. Swiss Skydiver ran a three quarters. Authentic ran a quarter. And Pneumatic, like I said, you know, went from fours and fives to a zero. So he's actually coming off the fastest race. So nobody really extremely fast in this race, in this field. So I'm looking for him to sit in mid-pack and just get the trip that I think he's capable of. Because the one thing about him that I really commented is that in the two races that he had run when I wrote about him is that how professional and responsive he was. And he's got that move. And, you know, the rider, Santana, rode him in those races with so much confidence and did not touch him in the stretch. Came home fast in both those races. I love the fact that he was running perfectly straight down the stretch. Does not like the whip. Likes to, you know, just like to be hand-ridden. And, you know, he runs straight. And he's got great extension in his stride. I just think he's ready. You know, saying that, he's going to probably do nothing like all the horses that I picked. But right now, he just looks like he's coming up to the race. If he can get a good position, get in from that outside and get on the inside of that, you know, the crown of that racetrack and not lose ground, I think he's got a shot. Let's put it this way, at least to finish in the money. But like I said, I don't think there's any standouts in here. Are you leaning towards anyone yourself?
I talked yesterday to Ed, and he and I both had the same approach going into Derby. Both were going to pick Art Collector, and Ed's going back to him. And there's so many reasons to, you know, to be rooting, frankly, for Tommy Drury in his first classic after the incredible disappointment, but the professional way in which he handled the situation, you know, for Derby. So Art Collector to me seems like the logical alternative. I'll tell you one thing though, that watching Authentic arrive at the stakes barn at Pimlico, he's and watching, holy cow,
He's got those big, long strides. He's
oh, my God.
Horse, and, you know, that's, I think that's what helps him get the distance, you know, to overcome his pedigree. He's got that big, long, those long gazelle-like strides to him. And that's why, because of those strides, that's why he wants to relax. And once he relaxes on the lead, good luck trying to catch him. Yeah, I know New York traffic almost did, but yeah, I think it was a case of him just fooling around in the stretch. And, you know, obviously I don't think he was getting tired, but it's just, you know, it was just one of those races. But, you know, for him to run those kind of fractions in the Derby and then turn back Tis the Law, you know, and really pretty much decimate the rest of the field. You know, I just think you let him have his own way, and it's going to be really tough when you with that kind of a stride. But, yep. You know, you get a really quick horse. And, again, none of these horses have sprint speed. But, you know, New York traffic, who I thought ran just an abysmal race in the Derby, it turns out he lost his front shoe, came back with a cut on his leg. So he was a bit of a mess coming out of that race. So, you know, I'll give him another shot, not to win, but, you know, to possibly put pressure on himself. Thousand Words gets blinkers on, which is kind of interesting, by the way. Now, here's a horse. Now, Baffert knows he's got a horse that wants to be on the lead in Authentic. And he puts blinkers on Thousand Words. And the one thing about Baffert is that when Baffert has two horses like this, when he wants a horse like Authentic to win, let's say a horse who's going for the Triple Crown or a Derby winner trying for the Preakness or something like that, it's very rare that he'll beat that horse. His second string will beat his first string on many occasions, but not like this. So I don't see Thousand Words. I think I can see Thousand Words finishing second or third with the blinkers if he runs his race. If he's as good as he was last year, and you know, if he's rounding back into form, he's working well as usual. But he's going to show some kind of speed with blinkers, and Swiss Skydiver I think is going to show speed, like we mentioned the last time. I think she in Kentucky Oaks. I think she was compromised by coming off a mile and a quarter race. Yeah, you try you run a filly at a mile and a quarter, and it has to dull him a little bit. Just like I think it dulled Tis the Law going a mile and a quarter in the Travers and coming back in 4 weeks. But for Skydiver, I mean, God, she just run everywhere. I mean, you got to give them credit, mm-hmm. You know, to run in this race, to run in the Bluegrass, to ship out to California, to go to Fairgrounds, to go to Oakland. I mean, she's been everywhere. She's an incredible filly, Keeneland. So,
and she matches, you know, up. She matches up well, Steve. And
if she does. So three figures matches up. And
yep.
You know, you got to remember too. By the way, is that when she ran second to Art Collector, you know, she was shipping back east from, you know, after being out in Santa Anita when she won the Santa Anita Oaks. So, you know, she had every right to regress. And, you know, she's only one of two horses in this race who's run a negative thoroughgraph number. You know, it was five races back, but she ran a negative quarter. And she's never really run a slow race. And, you know, even in her last start when she got beat, she ran a three quarters, which matches up to these horses.
Yep.
Wouldn't shock me if she was right there at the finish.
You know, the thing that you just brought up about Authentic, and if he does get to the lead, and the more you look at this, you do wonder, somebody's going to have to absolutely force themselves, you would think. And I, the question is, does Hernandez want to do that on Art Collector? Robbie Alvarado, you don't necessarily think is going to force the issue. And I don't, you know, the other four horses inside of Authentic, Max Player immediately to his left, New York Traffic, Jesus' Team, and Thousand Words, none of them, and even though New York Traffic has got, you know, Vanguard interest and speed, I think Authentic does stand to actually get the lead into the turn. The more I look at this.
Well, they're going to try. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, Baffert knows that's the way he wants to run. They're going to go. That's why I'm saying if there's any horse that can put pressure on him, it's Art Collector. Because Art Collector is going to be in a position that Bob Baffert likes to be in with a horse like that. When you have the rail, take advantage of it. You know, when they pass the stands the first time and they go into that first turn and you got the opportunity to cut that corner, if that field is bunched, He can cut the corner and get a lead himself because he's done it before. He's run slow for early. He's run fast early. None of these horses have great early speed. If you want to look at the Bristnet speed figures, they don't have early real speed. So, you know, it's horses that want to be there, but they don't need to be there. And they really don't have the speed where they're going to drag a rider to the lead.
Right.
But if you can cut that corner and you can get the lead on Authentic, you know, that's the way to beat him. Of course, you know, you say, well, I don't want to do it because I don't want to become vulnerable to the come from behind horses. But I think Art Collector has shown that he can run that way and keep going. I mean, he's just getting so good right now. We don't really know how good that horse is. But, and listen, even if Authentic wants to lead, and Velasquez can say, I'm going for the lead no matter what, well, you're still in a position to pressure him. You know, you just put pressure. You don't have to get the lead from him. Just put pressure on him. You want to sit a neck back or a half length back, but just don't let him get a clear lead. That's the whole thing. That's the key to the race. If he's got a clear lead in the backstretch, he'll probably win.
Well, and I think that's exactly, I think when they reach the backstretch and you see where things are, and I suppose, you know, Baffert was fine with the nine, and I think maybe the reason he doesn't mind that is he can envision a scenario where even if somebody is out there prompting from underneath, including Art Collector being the, you know, the obvious candidate, and Swiss Skydiver, you know, potentially the other candidate, unless somebody is hell-bent, at the very least, even if you don't have the lead, if you're sitting three wide with nobody, you know, with nobody kicking dirt in your face, the horse can still be comfortable. And you know, then it's up to Johnny, you know, when he wants to move, if he has somebody that he's going to have to collar at that point. So
right. He's capable of it. Like I said, we don't know because he's never come from off the pace to beat another horse. That's not saying he can't do it. But we just know what he can do. We just don't know what he can't do. Because the one time, like I said, when he didn't get the lead in the Sandy the Derby, when he broke to the outside, and he went up third going into the first turn, battling with two other horses, you know, Honor AP ran right by him at the quarter pole. So, you know, it'll be interesting. And again, when you people are going to look at the blinkers on 1,000 words saying, why is Baffert putting blinkers on here to give that horse speed? That's not why he's putting blinkers on there. If you watch 1,000 Words races, by the way, he just goofs around. I mean, he just wins by half a length, three quarters of a length.
Yep, that's very true.
He just loses focus. I think Baffert just wants him close to the pace. I think basically Baffert's looking to run 1-2 with those horses, which he very well may. But I think he's looking so this horse has some interest and stays focused because he doesn't have the raw speed. He just doesn't have it. You look at his speed figures. He doesn't have the speed of these other horses. So even with the blinkers on, I don't see him like going for the lead or putting pressure himself on his own stablemate. So I see him running, you know, third in the race on the outside, but staying focused. That's the key to him. Baffert's not putting this on for him to show speed. I'll tell you another horse, by the way, that kind of intrigues me that people might throw out because his speed figures are so-so, and he's been kind of a boring horse in the last few races, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him pick up a piece of it, his Max Player. You look at his race in the Belmont Stakes. He was coming off a 4.5 month layoff. They ran a mile and an eighth in 146.2. He was 5.6 wide. You know, they were going 46, 109, 134 and change. They came home 36-3 in that race. There's no way in the world he's going to win that race. But yeah, I thought he ran well to finish third. You know, in the Travers, if you watch him, he's climbing early. I don't think he was comfortable on that track at all. And he made a big move, and he wound up 5 wide. He came back completely covered in dirt. And again, since the Lord, it closed too fast. The last three quarters were run very fast, you know, to go 2:04.5. And, it, you know, the Derby, you're just going to have to forgive me. It was too far back. But, he was 11th at the head of the stretch and finished 5th. So I'm not saying he's going to, you know, I want him to win the race. But I can see him picking up a piece of it at a, you know, a fairly decent price. I think a lot of people are just giving up on him. You know, his speed figures are just basically mediocre. You know, he's been running, but you know, he just doesn't move. He's run 3.5, 3.5, 3.5, and 3.75. So he hasn't improved at all. He hasn't regressed or progressed. if he gets the right kind of trip, if there's enough, I don't want to say speed, but if there's enough of a contentious pace on the front end, he could, you know, pick up horses late. He was running well at the end of the Kentucky Derby to finish fifth. So, you know, I'll give a shot to possibly pick up a piece of it. So I would probably use him to complete. I hate to throw some of these other horses out that look really good, especially like Mr. Big News. But, you know, that would probably be my superfecta, you know, have Pneumatic third. But I am going to bet him to win, though, just in case, because I think he's ready to
have a good race. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And Max Player fourth.
This morning I was up at about four and I wanted to sit down and do my serious handicapping because I wanted to get Marty in here too to do the whole card. And when I got to this, Steve, I really had kind of a satisfying feeling, you know, looking at the field and realizing, you know, how well matched it is, and you know that's going to be a very entertaining running. You know, all the way everything has gone in so many directions at once, and has been so confusing, and you know, this is also, people should remember, you know, winning your in for the Breeders' Cup Classic, as a side note. And,
that is true. Yeah, for some reason, I don't associate the Preakness with pumpkins.
No, it's really a good race, and terrific. It's a terrific card, and part, you know, yeah, part of an amazing Saturday when you fold in Keeneland and Belmont.
I can see by the stack of past performances I have here from all,
yes,
all these different,
right,
tracks over the weekend. I mean, it's just a morass of past performances here.
Steve, we got about 7-8 minutes. A couple of other hits. Midnight Bisou thoughts.
Yeah, it's a shame. You know, it's a shame. But listen, she's done everything they've asked of her. You know, she had a couple of unfortunate trips in the Breeders' Cup Distaff, which prevented her from getting that big win. But, you know, she ran well, obviously, both times. To tell you the truth, I didn't think she got the greatest of trips or rides, if you want to, last year. I think she was just too far back. It's not the way she wants to run. And she just got started late. You know, it might have been the track. I don't know, because a lot of horses just really didn't handle that track. But listen, she's had a great career, and it's unfortunate, you know, that they're going to lose her, because, yeah, you know, the fillies are fairly thin right now. We got to look for the three-year-olds. That's why you got to give a lot of credit, you know, to a Swiss Skydiver, because with Midnight Bisou, with Monomoy Girl going straight to the Breeders' Cup, and Midnight Bisou now retired, but that leaves the Spinster open for anybody who, you know, Swiss Skydiver, I think, would have been a big favorite in the Spinster, you know, had she run on Sunday. So, but no, listen, you know, I was at Saratoga last year, you know, when she won the personal ensign. Unbelievable stretch run. I mean, that was just with late. I mean, that was just an incredible stretch run. But, you know, she's done everything she has. She's a gem of consistency. She never ran a big race. And she ran an unbelievable race in the Saudi Cup to Maximum Security. Yep. By the way, speaking of Maximum Security, Steve, just to throw a mention, if we don't have time today, I can save it for next week. But I heard you talking about Improbable's pedigree with Sid yesterday.
Yeah.
And there's a reason. I mean, I can expand on that, because there is a major reason why this horse goes a mile and a quarter. I mean, this horse's pedigree, the female family of this horse's pedigree, I could break it down like you wouldn't believe, but it's all the best of Darby Dan, you know, which is me, which I lived at Darby Dan every year. I spent every vacation there. I saw all these horses grow up from babies and follow their careers. So, at some point, when you got time, I can go over this horse's pedigree. You wouldn't believe the names in this horse's pedigree, the classic horses in here.
Well, and he is. I'm glad you mentioned Pneumatic as a five generation outcross too, because I made a note of that, and
yeah,
we'll save that for future reference. But I would be excited. You would have to think that Improbable is going to have. He's got the potential to really tick boxes when it comes to, you know, the fascinating world of, you know, of pedigree integration when certain markers mesh. He's an exciting stallion prospect.
He's going to be. Yeah. I mean, if I got 2 minutes, I can quickly run through this. I can just say that.
Go ahead.
You know, first of all, Darby Dam bred the third, fourth, and fifth dams, and they owned the sixth dam, Banquet Bell, you know, who became their main foundation mare. Because basically, if you want to hear a classic family, Improbable's third dam, Darby Vale, is a half-sister to Preakness and Belmont winner and three-year-old champion Little Current, who I saw grow up and took pictures of him as a yearling. And Darby Vale's sire, Roberto, who was owned and bred by Darby Dan, won the English Derby. Darby Vale's dam, Luana, is the only mare I ever saw give birth. I was staying at the farm, got up real early to watch her foal, a stage door Johnny Philly. Anyway, Luana is also the dam of Prayers and Promises, who won the Spinaway and the Matron. Luana's dam, Banquet Bell, is the dam of Kentucky Derby and Belmont winner, and three-year-old champion Shadowgate, and his full sister, by swaps, another champion, Primanetta, who won the Alabama, the Spinster, the Delaware Oaks. And don't forget, Swaps stood at Darby Dan for a lot of years before moving to Spendthrift. Primanetta produced full siblings by Hail to Reason, Cum Laude Laurie, who won four Grade Ones, the Beldame Spinster, Ruffian, and Delaware Oaks, and Prince Dauard, who won the Florida Derby, beating the unbeaten Foolish Pleasure, who also placed in the Travers, Bluegrass, and Flamingo. And finally, Primanetta also produced full siblings by Graustark, Mort Muller, who won the Gazelle and the Ashland, placed in the Coaching Club American Oaks and Mother Goose behind the Philly Triple Crown winners, Chris Everett, and also placed in the Test. And her full brother, Grenfell, won three stakes in Ireland. I watched both of those horses grow up from the time they were born. And just as a final note, Grenfell is the maternal great-great-grandsire of Yankee Gentleman, who's the broodmare sire of American Pharaoh. So, I mean, if you want to know where Improbable gets his class and stamina from, it's from this unbelievable Darby Dan line.
Well,
I mean, that's a lot of pedigrees. We talk about you got
big time
winners, Preakness winners, Belmont winners. I mean, Alabama winners. I mean, everything you can think of is in that pedigree, and it's just amazing, amazing pedigree.
He's going to arrive at Keeneland as your classic favorite. Steve, we've got obviously things like Jockey Club Gold Cup to look forward to, and everything else.
Yeah, I saw the nominations for that race. I don't know about that race.
You got what you wanted with
Mystic. 3-year-olds are going to be tough in there,
right? You got the 3-year-olds going.
Yeah, they're going to be tough in there. You know, also Mystic Guide, by the way, who I ranked number two behind Pneumatic. In those rankings that I have, the horses to watch, you know, the unproven horses to watch. So it would be ironic if Pneumatic runs big in the Preakness and Mr. Guide runs big in the Jockey Club Gold Cup. But he'll love the mile and a quarter for sure. You
Steve,
know, and Happy Saver, I think, is supposed to run in there.
Yep.
So, you know, maybe the 3-year-olds will make that race interesting.
I agree. Steve, let me get Marty in here, and I've got a tight window, but appreciate it. Secretariat.com's Steve Haskin. Taking some getting used to say that. And
me too.
Steve, enjoy it. We'll recap next week.
All right, Steve. Take care.
Steve Haskin, everybody, and boy, the pneumatic love just is as your alternate price option, Dick and Steve and Ed yesterday. You know, I've been looking forward to him. The other on that front, while we wait for Marty, the other horse that I brought up yesterday, Jesus' Team, I is going to find his way on the bottom too. He's a horse that's going to sit like fifth or sixth early, and he's not going to come from way out of it, you know, the way maybe a Max Player or a Mr. Big News is, or Accession. But he'll be in striking distance. And, you know, he's kind of hung around in the opportunities that he's had. And I've got a little affection. Love me some Jesus. And we love us some Marty McGee. Good morning. Marty, I'm my only disappointment is that we're not sitting together in Gabby Gaudette's old office there and doing our preview together live.
You mean Diane Cohen's old office? That was about 30 years ago when Diane had it. And maybe Harry Tendler. I think Harry Tendler had that office too.
Holy cow. You're pulling out. It's a lot of ghosts, exactly. The ghosts of Pimlico, without a doubt. Well, Marty, I tried to alert everybody last night to the terrific video preview that you did with Jay, and the whole Derby Watch campaign comes to an end. Randy Moss was on that too, and of course people can watch the replay very, very easily at drf.com. But you guys hit a lot of the themes, and you know, you've been on site. Give us your final thoughts. I mean, we're going to go through the whole card, but let's start with the Preakness.
Well, I mean, it's such a weird week here. Bob Baffert was talking this morning about how there's like hardly anybody here and how different it is. And, you know, you got the different time of year football's kind of putting this race out of. I had one of the local radio guys here, Nestor Aparicio, text me early this morning saying, man, nobody in this town, let alone this country, even know this race is going on Saturday, which is, you know, it's only partly true, but, you know, with Keeneland and Belmont and Santa Anita somewhat overshadowing the Preakness card, and they're, most importantly, they're not being a Triple Crown on the line. It's really a different kind of deal here. I'm the only DRF guy here. There's usually four or five or six of us, depending on the year and like that. But press box is almost empty. Can't get anything to eat. Yeah, it's really different, Vic. I mean, you know, the race itself, though, is really interesting. As Jay and Randy and I discussed at length last night on the podcast. I'll have to find that. I've got somebody who's wanting to see it, and I've been too busy this morning. But
I'll get the link.
Okay, yeah, send that to me. And then, with Authentic, who I think, and I think Jay thinks, and Randy certainly thought, is particularly vulnerable in this race because of what figures to be a different pace scenario. The open air outside box where the air is fresh and clear really helped, I thought, Johnny Velasquez smooth Authentic up. He didn't really break all that sharp. Smooth him up where he didn't have to hustle him. He just kind of naturally, in that first long quarter of a mile in the Derby, was able to pass everybody and get over the rail. I don't know if that can necessarily happen here with the shorter run into the first turn and with more intense speed, those being Swiss Skydiver, Art Collector, maybe Thousand Words, who's going to be fresh, and maybe New York Traffic, who we discussed last night. Jay and Randy disagree with me, but maybe they think, let's just go on and try and make the front and see what happens. So, in any case, Authentic is outside of all those, but I think that Johnny, if he wants to make the lead and cut over the way he did in the Derby, it's going to be a completely different type of hustle for him to do that. So if you can envision a scenario, Bick, whereby Authentic is caught 3-4 wide into the first turn because of these other horses going, it might be a completely different outcome for him. So instead of getting 8-1, which you got on him in the Derby, you'd have to take 8-5 or so tomorrow. I'm going to say no thanks to that. Plus, I love, as you know, I love Art Collector here.
Yeah. Yeah, and the irresistibility, I suppose, of for all of us that we're going to pick Art Collector in Derby. The difficulty is to not go back to him, and but you have to go back. If you're doing it, you've got to go back, but you've got to have a clear head about it. You can't just do it out of out of affection and kind of nostalgia for what you hoped was going to be a storybook finish for Tommy and the horse and Brian Hernandez Jr.
Well, I think the horse is going to sit like a fat rat on both turns. I think Brian's going to save all the ground. just sit there and just wait for stuff to happen. And, as Jay pointed out in his excellent story about him that's in the Friday editions of Daily Racing Forum, America's Turf Authority since 1894, I think that Brian will have the patience to just sit there and wait behind the other speed, the horses we've already talked about. So, this horse has such a beautiful way of going. He's so strong. He's just an exceptional athlete, and I think all things being on the square, he's the best horse in the race, and I'm going to bet with confidence.
I love it. What's the exotic picture look like? Who's the right price to feather into this?
Oh, I think one of the two capable closers, those being two of the four out of the Derby, Max Player and Mr. Big News, I think they'll be picking up some late pieces if they go gangbusters like we suspect they might. So it'd be a 3-2 or a 3-8 for me.
Very good. All right. Well, any other stories brewing out of the stakes barn?
Well, did you even go through the whole Swiss Skydiver jockey thing? Because I was all over that all weekend. I was front and center with McPeak, and have you had time to go through that?
Honestly, I really didn't, and I didn't for a couple of reasons. I mentioned in passing when after the word had come that Robbie Alvarado was getting the mount, and some of the really disheartening things that people chose to say about him and getting the assignment. There's actually a whole thing here with McPeak and some of his hijinks about if Art Collector won the Derby and then was going to go for the Preakness, and what would I do then? A lot of this was just to me a cloud of goofiness.
Well, in a nutshell, though, Kenny held out too long to pronounce her as a
yes.
As in the Preakness. He did it last Saturday around noon, after she worked. And Tyler even worked her at Churchill. And so, that Matt Musicard, Tyler's agent, was like, well, I can't wait for this. So he went ahead and according to Kenny, reneged on the agreement that they had from Oaks to Preakness that Tyler's supposed to fulfill. But instead, Matt took a bunch of calls, and you as a jockey in this coronavirus deal, you don't just miss Saturday's mounts, you miss everything that surrounds it.
Right.
So
that's right.
Essentially, Tyler would have been given up a whole bunch of good mounts tomorrow, Saturday, Sunday at Keeneland. They got 10 graded stakes there. And, in lieu of the horse is going to be, 9-1 in the Preakness. So that's basically why they both did what they had to do. And then when Kenny, who said he didn't realize until Saturday night he was out of the rider, I called Kenny right after Musicart called me and said, look, you sure you got Tyler? He says, oh, yeah. Matt said there was no problem. I said, okay. Left it like that. Well, then Sunday morning, Kenny called me with, are you ready? Are you ready to do this? Okay. Who is it? Robbie Alvarado. So, yeah. And then, Robbie has been in disfavor for whatever reason over the last couple of years. His stats have dropped off a cliff. It's mostly, or actually really, because nobody else was available. He tried to get Mike Smith, he tried to get some other guys, but everybody else is committed, and the ranks of the big-name jockeys are stretched so thin this weekend that, that's what he was left with. So Ron Anderson texted me, said, Kenny's going to have to ride this one himself. So anyway, that's it.
Well, Robbie Alvarado has won himself a Preakness, and famously on one of the greatest Triple Crown seasons of all time. So that she's in capable hands. I'll just put it
absolutely
that way.
Absolutely. If he's on the best horse Saturday, he's going to win the race.
Well, and she's competitive. I mean, there was the question of whether you were better off running in this versus the Spinster on Sunday. What was Kenny's thoughts on that front?
Well, that was before Midnight Bisou was retired.
That's so true.
He thought he was going to be running a three-year-old against a five-year-old earner of $7.5 million who was going to be 2-5 in the race or whatever. And now it's, I guess they're taking entries today for the Spinster. But after they had committed, this all happened, two or three days ago with Midnight Bisou. So after they committed, they weren't going to turn back. Robbie was the first guy I saw here on, Thursday. He's the first guy I saw when I walked the track about 6:30 yesterday morning. And he had already gotten on Swiss Skydiver. She went out at 6 o'clock. And he and I started reminiscing right away, and I said, the first time I met you was in 1994 in the Arlington Racing office with Lenny Pike, because Lenny Pike had reached down to us and brought him around, and a lot of water has gone under the bridge since then, Big.
That's for sure. Well, all right, Marty, let's back things up to today's action, and let's get some opinions. And, of course, the Chick Lang, particularly today, very important, because with Volatile having been injured and retired, Yoppin from the Asmussen barn becomes sort of the sprinter in waiting, as it were.
Yeah, for Steve. Yeah, this horse, Yoppin. By the way, they had such a heavy rain Tuesday night that out of an abundance of caution, as they say, they have taken the non-stakes races off the turf. They got a 10-race card today. Races 2, 4, and 10 are off the two turf sprint stakes. Dub Berry 1 and the Jim McKay stay on as races 6 and 8. Chick Lang is race number 9, named for my dear friend and semi-mentor from back in the day here at Pimlico. Everybody looks up to Barney Nagler. I've told you that story. But scratch number 4, Blackberry Wine, out of the 9th race that Chick Lang leaves the field of 9. Yoppin is 4-5 on the morning line. I'm sure he'll be something close to that. The only thing about this, though, Steve, is you got another speed horse to his outside, and it's Paco. And, maybe he can menace or entertain or otherwise occupy Yoppin for an indefinite period of time, and then maybe something else can come up from off of it. Otherwise, it sure looks like he's going to go gate to wire.
Looking elsewhere in this, that horse, it's a funny set of races, really all three days, because there's some strong favorites, and we'll talk about the Jim McKay in a second, where Texas Wedge looks, like a strong favorite. And then you go shopping for some alternatives. That Arcan of Michael Pino's to the outside, Dreams Untold of John Service looks forward going. There's a couple of, you still have to build some tickets. Those were two that I thought if was going to key off of a Yoppin. Talk about the Jim McKay, and Peter Miller has been winning, a lot of stakes of late, and he sends Texas Wedge up from Monmouth for this spot, and he looks like a beach ball.
Yeah, I mean, we have an original field of 10 in the Jim McKay. I remember him being around here. He and Dale Austin were pretty good friends, because Jim knew that Dale was my mentor at the Baltimore Sun, and Jim knew that Dale knew his stuff. So Jim would kind of lurk around, because Jim was into the big sports as opposed to the niche that racing is. So he would kind of be there, and I would just kind of be like, man, look at, I'm right here in the shadow of a famous guy. But anyway, There's a couple of scratches in here. Number one, Axtell, and number five, Fair Catch. And I would guess at number seven, Dr. Feelgood, he comes out too, because there's not going to be more rain. So they're definitely going to keep this on the grass. So you basically got a field of seven in here. Tiger Blood, he's pretty fast. I mean, I don't know. He hasn't done much since he left. Steve Kosaris went over to Maker, which is somewhat unusual for Maker. But if you go two back to his race at Ellis Park, he's pretty capable. So I think if he shows his usual gas, maybe he'll get the jump on Texas Wedge. He may or may not be bogged down along the rail, but I wouldn't necessarily call Texas Wedge a cinch. I have this lingering memory of Texas Wedge at Gulfstream and Peter Miller just going crazy. He was there on Pegasus Day when this horse won. It was like it was his favorite horse of all time or something. But that was his last victory, was on Pegasus Day. And since then, he's run against some pretty darn good horses in the spring and summer. And I assume he's fresh, and he'll be even money-ish for Peter Miller.
And he gets Paco, who will keep him a little bit closer. What are your thoughts in the very one?
The $100,000 The Very One, whose name, by the way, for a mare who was bred and owned by Helen Pollinger. I would assume she's no longer with us, but this generally comes up a pretty good race. She scratched number 6, 14, and 16 out of there. Shalom was going to be pretty interesting if it was on the grass. I mean, on the grass, I'm sure that's why they were hoping it would come off the grass. But also probably scratch number 2. Who's an MTO. So the 16 gets down to 12 horses. I mean, I'm not a big fan of JoJo Air, number 8 for Wesley. So I'd probably be looking elsewhere here, Bick. I haven't really done much homework on this race. So Peaceful for Stidham, who's been red hot recent months. Hear My Prayer, trained by David, number 11. Hear My Prayer, trained by David Art Fisher, classmate of mine, class of 77, St. X High School in Louisville. Pretty nice filly. She is a 3-year-old going against the older, and she hadn't run since March, so there's a couple strikes against her. But might be the outside speed. I don't know. Foolish Humor's kind of fast out there, too. So pretty interesting race. I honestly haven't really done much homework on this.
Well, suggest to people they look at the 7-2, Ode to Joy, for Ed Seltzer and Bev Anderson, and one of their homebreds, the 5-year-old mare, and she gets back on the turf. And, you know, it's interesting. Cal Lynch, for Mrs. De Tomaso, been trying to get Giggling back on the grass all summer, and she ended up in 3 off-the-turf events. So the 3-year-old filly that was bred by Heinz Steinman, Giggling, may just break running, and is the one potentially down inside to catch. But I thought that Ode to Joy at 8-1 made some sense. Let's talk about tomorrow before we dive into Saturday. You got the Pimlico Special, interesting scenario in here, because you've got Owendale, third last year in the Preakness, as well as last year's winner in Tenfold. I thought this came up okay.
It came up pretty good. I mean, I remember back my first few years here, they revived it, and the first one had Lost Code, Ali Sheba, and Bet Twice. And that was just, to me, that was one of the pinnacles of that entire era here back in the 80s when Frank DeFrancis decided to bring that back. But it's kind of gone down a little bit since then. They have had, I think, I was kind of surprised they've had like 5 Horse of the Year honorees to win the race since 88, so that's a feather in its cap. Not for a while. I think Invasor in 06 was the last one. But, I mean, looks like Owendale's going to be about even money in here. And this is the first leg, as you know, of the 2-day, and it has alternated over the years between the Black-Eyed Susan Preakness Double or the Pimlico Special Preakness Double. Obviously, with Black-Eyed Susan on Saturday, they're going with the 2-day Special Preakness Double, and I'm thinking about just crushing Owendale to Art Collector and seeing what that nets me. But given the horses that Owendale's run against, he was second against by my standards. He's got the Tom St. Todd on his PPs. He's got some other good ones. And showed himself to be a quality horse last year with, I think it was three grade three victories. And the blame was salty as could be on that May card at Churchill. I just think in terms of class relief, I think he is getting some of that tomorrow, and I think he's your most likely winner of the special.
All right, let's get into Saturday, Mart, and maybe work a little bit backwards from the feature and Black Eyed Susan.
I don't, as much as I like Owendale for Cox, and Cox, by the way, brought 8 horses here. Maker brought 16. I think only 12 or 13 or 14, maybe. I haven't seen. I know Maker's represented in 12 races here during the 3 days. But Cox has 8 horses in. He has Owendale on Friday. He has 7 horses in on Saturday. A lot of major contenders. I don't necessarily think, though, that Bonnie South is one of them. She's going to be close to even money, you would think. I just have to, it's kind of gnawing at me, Steve, that why would they not have run her in the Kentucky Oaks? Was it a matter of timing and preparedness, or did they just want to do something lighter? Because they did run She Dares to Double, and it seems like Bonnie South had better credentials. So I would tend to maybe lean toward a price in here, either number 3, So Darn Hot, or maybe number 8, Hopeful Growth for Margotta. Chad Summers has tapped me on his horse, but she's going to be 40-1, so I'll probably take a flyer on that.
I thought that Project Whiskey for Butchie Reed. It was 15-1 down inside, and Butchie very much geared her toward this, and feels like she is a fit with an A race. I'll tell you who else this morning when I went through it kind of caught my eye. Besides Bonnie South, obviously, and I also thought that Hopeful Growth was okay. Mizzen Bow for Norm Cassie.
He told me he and I were sitting alone in the grandstand for one of those races last week at Churchill, and he told me that he liked her. So that I haven't really doped this race out that much either. I will say I am a fan of Butch Reed and his brother Mark. I mean they're A1 kind of guys.
Very much. I'm in the same camp. 2 of the best races on Saturday, Marty, are the 1-mile turf events for the girls and the boys. Early on the card, it's the Hilltop, and as the 9th, the Murphy. And I think there's a kind of a mojo price horse that everybody's landing on. I'll let you speculate on how to approach this.
I'm going to be honest here, Vic, as opposed to when I'm not honest, but I have not done my homework on these races.
Oh, that's all right.
I had to do the Gallarette, the 2 2-year-old races, the DeFrances, and the Preakness. So I really.
Oh, all right, that's fine then. All right, then let's talk about. All right, then let's talk about the horse that seems to be the mojo is reconvened for Benny Perkins, who I see everybody and their brother landing on, and Don Juan Kitten, pretty obvious as the 9-2 favorite. There's a favorite price you don't see too often. Talk about the Gallarette. We've got a couple of heavy heads here and a couple of horses trying to jump in and make a name for themselves.
Well, speaking of a 9-2 favorite in the Murphy, I am saying it's Keith Fusel's house. He does some in-house TV here at Pimlico, and he and I roomed together back in 1992 at Monmouth, and he's a dear friend, and he's a line maker here. So when I got in Monday evening, he handed me the PPs, and he said, look at some of these races. And I do recall him going, the Murphy just was unbelievable with the 9-2 favorite. I think the Hilltop was the same way. But the Gallarette, Juliet Foxtrot, I mean, she definitely is getting some class relief in there. I think it's going to start off with a pretty chalky in a pretty chalky way. That's probably why they carted it so early on the card. So she's coming out of the race won by Beau Recall on Derby Day, and she has some really nice figs and some good-looking races on her paper. So I imagine Juliet Foxtrot starts us off at about a 380 mutual in race 2.
I would also mention Steve Margolis with She's on the Warpath. And before the morning line came out, I actually sent a note to Steve. I said, boy, you got a nice chance in that Gallerette, and I didn't expect 7-2 per se. I thought they might get a little better number, but 7-2 on She's on the Warpath, and then Varenka for Grand Motion, and Grand puts the blinkers on out there on Varenka. You said you also you did the baby races.
The baby races. Keith Fussell made, and this is the power of Chad. He made a maiden favorite in both races. Number four, Domain Expertise, in the opener, the Salima, for the two-year-old fillies going a mile 16 on turf. And then he had a Grand Motion horse, the 3-1 favorite, Pivotal Mission, in race eight, the Fulton Gelling counterpart, the Laurel Futurity. And that one, I think they're both way wide open. It's going to come down to trips, as it often does, and in grass races like this. So take your best shot in either of those, really.
And then you mentioned the DeFrancis. One of the things I said at the start of the show when I was reviewing the cards from Keeneland and Belmont was that Stan the Man is going to stay up in New York. And after vacating the Vosburgh last week, he's going to stay in home and go a mile in the Kelso. So take the 7 out of your DeFrancis, Stan the Man. And a lot of eyes on Landeskog, it seems, Marty, and people thinking this will be a big springboard for him toward the Breeders' Cup sprint.
Well, I mean, that's certainly what Brad Cox is hoping for. I talked to him fairly long yesterday about this horse, and he's only had the one start more than a year since he ran that mega 108 buyer in the Gallant Bob last September at Parks, and that's when Doug O'Neill was still training him as a three-year-old. So, you know, Brad is as eager as everybody else to see how this horse is going to match up with the Greatest Stakes Company. He really has he kept saying fast. He kept saying this horse is really fast, you know, just fast. He said fast about 8 times. So, you know, I'm sure that he will be so fast that he will outleg a horse like Locky, number 4 in there, and just loom the one to catch. But I really kind of leaning here toward Centeno and Maker with Admiral Lynch, who got that 104 buyer. And seems to be in better recent form than Landeskog. I think maybe a minor upset is in the making here with number 1, Admiral Lynch, for Mike Maker.
Marty, I know you're headed to Timonium. Let me, though, ask you two follow-ups back in Kentucky, most notably. We talked to... I had a wonderful conversation with Chester Thomas on Monday because Brad Cox or Brett Calhoun had been with us the previous weekend after last week. So I reached for Chester, who I've always wanted to get on. Mr. Money, I don't know why he wasn't more apparent from a handicapping standpoint going into that race.
I wrote a lengthy story that ran the day before in the Friday editions of DRF. Just explaining, or allowing Brett to explain, actually, why the horse was viable in that spot. And boom, he got a great ride, a great trip, and trained to the minute by Brett to return 6-1. And I was mad because I was really not in betting mode. I was letting work get in the way of my gambling, damn it. So anyway, you know, I thought it was a great thing for him to win that race. You know, Brett's been on a roll. He had the huge third with Mr. Big News, and he had, of course, by my standards, win the Ali Sheba, and he's, you know, probably one of the top 4 or 5 candidates for the Breeders' Cup Classic. So these guys, I've told you this 20 times, I have so much admiration for the way these trainers operate, just seeing what they do on a day-to-day basis and how hard they have to work. They do so willingly, and you like to see a guy named Brett have a result like that.
Well, and finally, for the Keeneland action, of course, opening tomorrow. Anything that you were tracking into opening weekend?
Not really. I mean, I'm in Barry here, Vic. You know,
yeah.
I'm a one man band here for this COVID year. So yeah.
Well, Marty, wish I was there with you and. I appreciate. I thought it'd be smart to get this in and out of the way, knowing that you know you are exactly that one man banding it on this go around. But you said you were going to do everything you could to get to Preakness. Even under these conditions, it's your favorite, and I'm glad you're there for us. And we'll do some recapping next week.
Yeah, I'm going up to meet some buddies of mine. They've got a horse in here on the 5th. They just want to meet at the OTB because some of them can't get in because of the owner situation, the fan situation here and everything. But, yeah, send me that link to the podcast last night, and also put my picture of me and Chick Lang up on when you're – that
for the listing, I will. That's exactly what I'll do. I'll do it for the listing today. A fabulous picture where you can't tell if it's Marty or if it's a young Paul Hornung. One or the other.
See you back.
Thanks, Mark. There he is, Marty McGee, DRF McGee, everybody. Let's take a break here, and we do have a visit coming with Rich Eng, and now I've got to actually make an adjustment, too, because we can't get Jeff Bloom is in a meeting, so he couldn't join us where we thought he was going to. All right, so we'll have a surprise. How about that? Back after this. At the races, into hour three already, about 40 minutes to fill out on this Thursday. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.
Sirius XM Sports presents...